Welcome to Arts Waves. I'm Richard Walensky. Michael Moran is the co-artistic director of Ubuntu Theater Project in Oakland, and Colin Blattel is the managing director of the Ubuntu Theater Project, which is starting its first season as a yearly theater company. In the past, there were three summer festivals. They've already produced 15 plays, partnered with Laney College's Theater Arts Department. This is a new theater company founded in Oakland in 2012. Focus, I guess, is on diversity in the arts. So let's start a little bit. I did some research and found out, well, you're both from El Cerrito. Did you know each other in El Cerrito?
Oh, yeah. Colin and I have known each other since we were in middle school.
You and the other co-director, Michael, you went to UCSD.
Mm-hmm.
He's also from Oakland.
I don't think he was born in the Bay, but before going to UC San Diego, he lived in the Bay and worked in Berkeley theaters and stuff. That's William Hodgson, and he and I met at UC San Diego's MFA program.
So let's talk a little about how Ubuntu came to be. Colin Blattel, you have an MA in public policy, and you've been involved. Right now you're working at Blueprint Oakland?
Yeah, it's actually the space that houses the Ubuntu Theater Project. So we have our rehearsals there, and we have our office space there.
You have a BFA in theater arts from Boston University, but you're basically a development manager type.
I do have my background in the arts. Actually, before we did theater together in middle school, we actually knew each other in Little League ball back at El Cerrito Youth Baseball at age like 8 or 9. But after sports, yeah, I was huge into theater, had an incredible experience, was, you know, personally transformed, professionally transformed by my experiences in the arts. But after I graduated from Boston University's BFA program, I was challenged by the industry and, to me, the careers that I saw in front of me as an actor, and started getting involved in other volunteer work and in education, and just fell in love with service work and found, you know, just as much passion as I had for the arts, I had for volunteerism and nonprofit work. And so kind of shifted into development work and program service. I was in Miami for a while, Sacramento, and then it was actually Michael, after I had been in the nonprofit field for about 5-6 years, that Michael kind of then pitched me on perhaps a little bit of a career change.
Let's talk about Michael Moran, because you're the artist here, you're a director, you've been an actor as well. Let's go back a little bit. So you took the theater route to begin with, mm-hmm. and wound up in UC San Diego. Is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And that's where you met William Hodgson.
Yeah. So Colin and I also went to college together at Boston University. And then after Boston University, I pursued an acting career and went to Chicago. And it was actually in Chicago, in part, that I wanted theater to be a little bit more expansive and do different kinds of things. And then at UC San Diego, I met William, and along with a lot of other remarkable actors. And it's an incredibly diverse program. And at UC San Diego, we supplemented our education by doing work by diverse playwrights. So we would literally be up from like 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. doing plays, rehearsing, throwing them up. And then over the summers, we'd bring them up here to the Bay and produce them in site-specific locations.
Then you both graduated, and while you were there, you discussed having an Oakland theater company?
Yeah, because I've always grown up in the Bay, it felt like a natural fit. My family's here, I have friends here, and the opportunity to have a theater company that values diversity, also to be in Oakland, which is now, I think, arguably like the most diverse city in the country, in all different kinds of ways, I felt like it was an incredibly blessed opportunity.
And you decided to not go the L.A. route.
So in Chicago, I didn't have a lot of money, and I would take the bus. I was so dependent upon that bus driver doing their job, and I'd be so grateful that they did their job. And then I'd go off and rehearse some play somewhere, and there was no way for that play ever to reach the bus driver. So there was no way to ever actually, like, fulfill that circle. And I think theater should do that. I think theater should sort of be a leveling ground in a sociopolitical realm so that, like, the bus driver and the millionaire can sit in the same space and commune over what's human. So Colin and his public policy background, I think that's a split that we sort of want to mend, that theater can actually do both of these things. And I think that the Bay in particular, as opposed to like L.A. or Chicago or New York, is particularly ripe for that kind of work.
Well, what Margot Hall told me recently was that one of the issues is that there aren't diverse theater companies, or even black theater companies, certainly, mm-hmm. which you're a diverse one rather mm-hmm. than a black one, in Oakland. It's kind of interesting that if you look at all the theater companies, the big ones in the Bay Area, none of them are in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're trying to fix that. But I think to that point, part of what makes theater theater is the audience. I mean, it's a rehearsal if that audience doesn't show up. So the audience makes it a performance. And the work, in some way, has got to reflect the community that shows up to that play. And I think it can reflect it in all different kinds of ways. But one of those ways is certainly you want to see yourself on stage in some capacity. So it sort of is, you know, obvious that it has to be a diverse theater company in Oakland.
You and William get together, you contact Colin. You all come up to the Bay Area, and then what? How do you develop what you call a company and what you call an ensemble, both terms being used in your publicity? How does that all come together? And I know you're partnered with Laney College, so that comes together as well.
So what we did our first summer is we brought up, I think, 12 UCSD students. And then our second summer, we actually brought up around like 33. And we housed them with friends of my mom. We rehearsed in my mom's clubhouse. My mom fed us all dinner. It became a sort of like all hands on deck. Let's just make this work. Let's do something we're passionate about and we feel needs to be done in the world. And so from there, it becomes a contagious thing. And people see that we're doing something arguably like pure-hearted, that this is something we want to serve with. And people sort of jump on board. And hopefully the work is good. So they see it. And they're like, how did you do that? Oh, my goodness. And all of our work is in site-specific locations. It's non-traditional spaces like an airplane hangar and a vintage car shop and an auto mechanics space. And we can go into the theory and philosophy around that. What that allowed us in part was access. And giving access to audiences that might not otherwise feel invited or be able to afford something like Berkeley Rep or ACT off the bat.
I saw that Brother Size from the photo was done outdoors, is that correct?
Yeah, it was done at Dana Meyer Auto Care on San Pablo Avenue in Albany. And my mom and I spent, oh my God, countless hours trying to find the right auto shop. We literally drove up and down San Pablo Avenue for hours and like would go in and try and pitch this idea, and auto mechanics would look at us cross-eyed. And so we saw that one, that space, and Dana was extraordinary and allowed us to do it sort of in the back there, and it was a perfect venue.
How many people can you fit in there, and where do you get the chairs? Do you just bring everything in?
Basically, yeah. Colin?
The Dana Meyers venue fit about 50 audience members, and we had some good supporters who just happened to also throw events in their own space and happened to have a collection of chairs in which we could borrow. But that was certainly our most hodgepodge theatrical experience there. And arguably, actually, from our feedback, was one of the most rewarding in terms of being site-specific.
I once saw a site-specific play of, I think it was American Dream by Edward Albee, that was mm-hmm. done in a living room. It was done in several living rooms. What I noticed is that by removing the theater, mm-hmm. you create something very different.
Oh, absolutely. It's something I'm really passionate about. I mean, I think the relationship between the performer and the audience member is what we go to the theater for. And it's an engagement. I mean, the audience has got to feel a visceral connection to what is going on. So when you remove that formality, you remove that fourth wall. I mean, if you came to see Gospel of Loving Kindness, the audience and the actors, they touch each other. I mean, they're that close. And so it allows for this sort of visceral experience.
Well, Gospel of Loving Kindness has closed now. Now, that was at a church?
That's correct. It was at Oakland City Church. And we did Dance of the Holy Ghost there also. But our next show is actually going to be at the Blueprint. And it's about Lisa Ramirez's experience in New York, sort of seeing both sides of a socioeconomic divide between nannies and mothers and the complexity therein.
You're also doing various things that are more standard. You're doing a version of The Grapes of Wrath, and mm-hmm. you're doing Doug Wright's I Am My Own Wife. And that's more like the theater that we know. I Am My Own Wife, for instance, has been at New Conservatory mm-hmm. and came on tour.
Yeah. One aspect of it is both are also site-specific. So I Am My Own Wife is going to be in a woman's living room. and Grapes of Wrath is actually going to be in a probably in like a, some kind of garage space. Grapes of Wrath, our view on it is that it's about the human family. So it's going to be an extraordinarily diverse cast. The objective is actually that when you watch the play, it's not blind casting, it's sort of conscious casting. And so you, what you see is this family get along that look all different from one another, but are able to move as one and survive. And it's actually that ability to stay together that allows for their survival. And our actor, William Hodgson, who is black, is actually playing the actor, the character in I Am My Own Wife, which is also fairly different. Usually there's a white actor in that role.
None of these shows, well, I don't know about Gospel of Loving Kindness, but the other shows, they don't seem to be what we would call political theater necessarily. Mm-hmm. But you are seeing them in that light, correct?
I guess the way I would put it is that I think that being political is just one part of being a human being. Ubuntu means, it's a Zulu proverb. It means, I am because we are, and my humanity is tied to yours. And it's actually just speaking to a refugee from Burundi, and he mentioned that, like, the way he knows it is it's just the essence of being human. Part of being human is sociopolitical, but it's only a part. And so that's something we don't want to shy away from. It's also something that we don't want to highlight more than anything else. Like, all of the work has a political thread, but I think also a lot of the work has a sort of supreme humanistic component.
Colin Blattel, at your end, what exactly are you dealing with in terms of creating the entire theater project or the year?
Being a startup company, you're going to wear many hats. And being in the arts, we have the joy of being in probably the least well-funded area of the nonprofit sector. But within that also comes great joy to really kind of energize your people, your base, and what you're doing. And I think what's unique about starting up a theater company is that the work, when it comes alive, speaks to people's kind of innermost wishes, desires, and dreams. So the joy is getting to create this team, even when you're still like a small, scrappy, young nonprofit, to help kind of bring the work alive. And so, you know, that's everything from organizing our volunteers in the front of house to figuring out like our ticket sales and how we're going to get the word out and get people to see the show. And then certainly now taking a deeper dive into nonprofit partnerships, community partnerships. As you mentioned, there is that political thread in a lot of our shows. And so like the Gospel of Loving Kindness deals with gun violence. And so, you know, we've had the California Wellness Foundation, Community Works, other nonprofits that are interested in that subject matter and how can they partner with us? How can we get people to come see the show? How can we leverage the message within the show to help other areas of what other people are working on? So there's a lot that we're working on.
How did Marcus Gardley come into this?
A friend of mine sent me one of his plays a few years ago, and I read it, and I fell in love, and then I saw it was based in Oakland, and I thought, there's just no way, this is incredible. So I wrote him, I mean, out of the blue. He had no idea who I was. And I said, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm about. We want to do it in Oakland, in the community. And he gave it to us for free. Since then, I've met him and gotten to know him and befriended him, and he's the chair of our advisory board. He also gave us Gospel of Loving Kindness for free and has just been an extraordinary partner for us. Just to say, I think he and I share the same worldview. The theater has the unique opportunity to speak to people on a essentially human level and bring people together from oppositional backgrounds. And that's something that I think very deeply. I mean, mine is sort of a socioeconomic, and I think his is very much socioeconomic and race. And how is it that we get these people who, for whatever reason, we are not quite getting along or we're missing each other in the world? How do we get one another to sit down in a space together and sort of erase what breaks us apart and sort of commune together? And so that's what we're doing with our site-specific, doing in all these different parts of Oakland and the Bay. That's what we're doing with our audiences. It's a very diverse audience. And that's what we're doing with our ensemble and our plays. And if you walk into our rehearsal rooms, the culture is one, I mean, we circle up at the beginning, we circle up at the end. It's one that's very familial, and it allows for that kind of exchange that can transcend all the things that get in the way of us recognizing one another.
One of the issues that the larger theater companies are facing is an increasingly aging audience. Is your audience as young as you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of our board members is Michael Torres, who's the chair of the Laney College Theater Arts Department. And Michael Torres was speaking to one of our other partners from the RHE Charitable Foundation. The discussion was just like how much theaters are focusing right now on engaging diverse audiences, But it's very effortful, and like, this is what our audiences are normally like, and how do we bring in more people? And they're working really hard at it. And both Michael and Jennifer were kind of reflecting about the Ubuntu Theater Project and just realizing, like, it's really refreshing just to know that the diversity in the audience just is. It's actually not an effortful thing. It's actually an effortless thing. That speaks to the work we're doing, the way in which we invite people into the space. Every show that we produce has pay-what-you-can prices at the door, so that cost is not a barrier to entry. We do it in the site-specific location, so we're producing it in different parts of the Oakland community, so it feels like it's a neighborhood, familial experience.
And it has artistic excellence.
Yeah.
So people who are going to go see something at Berkeley Rep or ACT or other larger are not going to be able to deny the quality that we are doing at a pay-what-you-can rate. And that allows for a diverse audience. So, we have young people, but it's also multi-generational. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, really powerful.
Well, one of the ways that the larger theater companies try to get new people in is by kind of moving into these strange environmental plays and, mm-hmm. you know, plays without plots or characters. Mm-hmm. But when I'm looking at this, I'm seeing a more traditional character, mm-hmm. plot, story, which is why I go to theater, but how do you view those alternative ideas?
I actually consider what we're doing in the experimental theater realm. However, I also value accessibility. And I think that what can happen is that you get into a conversation from artists with other artists. And that's not what we're doing. What we want is exquisite art, but exquisite art that the layman can understand and get into and, you know, feel invigorated by. And if we can split that difference, if the layman can get into it and the sort of elite artist can get into it, there is a synergy that can develop that I think is extraordinarily powerful, unique, and necessary.
You have three guys running it. Is this a testosterone issue as well? I mean, do you have a number of women who work with you then?
Yeah, we have a really diverse group and a lot of extraordinary women who play leadership roles in our organization. Every couple of months, you know, we shift a little bit of, like, who's in the team and who's helping to work on different things. I mean, theaters in general try to be egalitarian and flat hierarchies. To be honest, we're still figuring it out. And we have a lot of great people, again, both on the volunteer side as well as on the paid kind of staff side. But what the role is and what the job responsibilities are still evolving as our needs are evolving. I mean, we just opened our first show.
And over the past few summers, when the UCSD students came up mm-hmm. here, there were women that were integral to it. I mean, so, like, part of what's happening is that we're in a transition, too. So, like, Heather Ramey, Emily Whalen, right now Mary Hill. And then all of our shows, almost all of them except for maybe I Am My Own Wife, focus primarily on women. Gospel of Loving Kindness is about two mothers. Grapes of Wrath, of course, you have Ma Jode. Hurt Village, there's multi-generational women in that one. Lisa Ramirez's show is a one-woman show. Milta Ortiz wrote Moss. Believe us, we're hyper-conscious of the fact that there are three men.
Let's talk a little bit about this season. The first show was Gospel of Loving Kindness by Marcus Gardley at Oakland City Church. The next one is Exit Cuckoo Nanny in Motherland.
That's
by
right.
Lisa Ramirez. Who is the star of it?
Lisa is. She created the show. She just won this really fancy playwriting award in New York. This was her first show that she wrote, I believe. She wrote it in New York about her experience moving from the Bay to New York. She's part Latina. It's her experience as a nanny and sort of in the underbelly of New York City and what that is, being on sort of that side of a socioeconomic divide. It's a complex issue. What is also complex and innately human is what it means to bring up your child. When mothers are leaving to pursue their careers because they feel they have to in order to make a living, what does it mean for another woman to come in and raise that child? And a lot of the nannies from developing countries have also left their child. So there's this cycle going on which kind of speaks to this issue of not being present with one another. That also is sort of integral to the theater, that we enter the theater to sort of be present with one another. So she wrote it, and she's starring in it. She's rewriting it for Ubuntu. So this is very much a West Coast premiere.
And Michael Moran, where is this going to be?
This will be at the Blueprint at 439 International Boulevard in Oakland. This is our office space by day, but we are going to be transforming it. There will be a sandbox in the middle of the space. There will be objects that begin in the sandbox and end up suspended somehow. And, you know, we always try and utilize the space in very creative ways.
I Am My Own Wife by Doug Wright, which will be a one-man show by William Hodgson. Where's that going to be?
That looks like it's going to be on Thousand Oaks Boulevard in Berkeley, up in the hills of Berkeley. Kirsten, who is a wonderful friend of ours, has graciously offered her home as a potential venue, and she has this makeshift theater space in her, like toward her basement. And
yeah, it used to be a ballroom, actually. The home kind of has some historic background to it, and it's
beautiful. It's beautiful and very intimate. There's a fireplace. The story is very much about antiques and objects, and so we'll be having those objects brought in.
Grapes of Wrath by Frank Galati. How did you get hold of that show?
I directed in grad school, actually. Okay. It was fairly successful. And
I'll say. I went down to San Diego and I saw it, and it was one of the best pieces of theater I've ever seen. I think the feedback from the donor support system of the UC San Diego program reported back to the director of the MFA directing program that it was one of the best shows they'd seen in 25 years, and there was a lot of energy around it. You know, it was done at the La Jolla Playhouse. It was a bigger and much more like fully produced theatrical experience than we would do. We're going to do more of the bare bones theater aesthetic that we do. But the heart and the essence of the way it was done will translate very well.
And it's also worth mentioning that our aesthetic is very a poor theater aesthetic. It's bare bones. It's essentialized. But the work that we do allows that to be exquisite. So, you know, the Jode family marching across the country, the way we do the truck is there's a potbelly stove, a rope, and a broomstick, and that family sings and marches as they push. Usually when you do Grapes of Wrath, you need an actual truck on stage, which costs a lot of money. And part of the play is that they are poor. And so it's that struggle. And when you see that kind of that aesthetic matching that content, I think it's something that makes for something very unique.
And you'll be directing it?
Yep.
Are you also in it? Or?
Oh, no. I hope not.
Have you ever directed yourself?
Yeah, actually, with Waiting for Lefty last summer, which also was very successful, Emily Whalen and I were both in it, and we both co-directed. And so it was a game of, like, one person's acting, the other one's watching, the other one's acting, the other one's watching. And
were you flipping out most of the time over that, or was it okay?
Actually, it worked out really well. I mean, partly, it just, you have to have a lot of trust for your co-director, and luckily we did, and we went to grad school together, so that helped.
Who's directing I Am My Own Wife?
That's me, too. William and I also know each other so well, and he will be playing 16 characters. It's sort of helpful just that we have this shared history and shared vocabulary.
And then there's a show called Moss by Milta Ortiz.
Mm-hmm. That is about a protest that ensued in Arizona about a curriculum that took away the ability to learn about cultural heritage. So the Chicano population protested. Michael Torres, who's the department chair at Laney, will be heading that production in many ways.
And where did that play come from?
Michael Torres knows the playwright, and when we were looking for plays, he suggested that we take a look at this. Fusion Theater Project, which is sort of a group within Laney, will be starring and acting in that play.
And have you found a venue for it, or you're still looking?
I'm still looking. Still looking.
So you don't expect Ubuntu ever to have its own theater, or do you?
We do. It's a thing we've talked a lot about and kind of wrestled with. We don't want to let go of our site-specific model because, again, both it creates an incredible part of the artistic excellence of our work, as well as it speaks to the accessibility piece and people reimagining their relationship to space and to community and, you know, depending on where we produce. But also, realistically, to create a sustainable company that produces year-round work, you also need a little bit more of a degree of assuredness and dependability and predictability. And so having your own space allows you to control a lot of the variables that can, thankfully, knock on wood, we haven't gotten knocked off our horse yet. We have friends who have been starting companies and are young and scrappy like us, but, like, you get the rights pulled from you, you get a venue pulled from you. Like, there are some things when you're kind of building this house of cards that can really undo everything. And so having an artistic space and home, which we could do realistically, I think, within a couple of years, would allow us to produce the work.
Everything about site-specific is hard. You've got to scout out a location. You've got to explain this crazy thing to whoever owns that spot. And then you've got to work around whatever's going on. And the amount of things that go wrong that we have, like, sort of unbelievably, miraculously not made a disaster is really remarkable.
But also it's live theater, and people are pretty forgiving of issues because you're seeing something where the audience, and this to me, one of the great differences between theater versus film and television, mm-hmm. you're all in it together.
Absolutely.
You're creating this piece
yes.
together.
Mm-hmm.
They are aware of you. You are aware of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And even when we get our own home, we will still, I think, embed site-specific productions into our season. We will just perhaps curate a different number of them.
And just to say, our own home, the way we envision it, is actually taking a space that's not a theater and making it into a theater. Like you walk into a house and all of a sudden there's a theater in there, or you walk into some kind of warehouse and that's a theater. So I think we don't want to lose that identity.
Yeah. When we do get our own space, it won't feel like a traditional theater.
The only show we haven't discussed, because one hasn't been chosen yet, is Hurt Village by Katori Hall. Mm-hmm. Is that coming from somewhere?
I believe it actually hasn't been done out here in the Bay yet. I believe it was on Broadway. Katori Hall also wrote On the Mountaintop. She's produced all over the place. But Hurt Village, I think, has a pretty big cast, and so that precludes theater companies from being able to afford it very often. And one of the ways in which we've done it is that we're new and we're young, and so we're able to be a little bit more nimble at the moment.
What is it?
A family drama, but of course kind of the story that's happening within the family also then reflects the broader society. It's about a housing project in Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. This family's struggling to survive and pitted up against a lot of the challenges that a poor black family would go through in Section 8 housing. Every time you just work hard to survive and to make it, other things just keep coming back to knock you down. And so the play is so powerful but hard. And so I also think perhaps it's also why it hasn't been done as much. But we're blessed to have Nataki Garrett come in and direct this piece for us that is really challenging and requires a great deal of skill and sensitivity.
Are you looking at all at the possibility down the road of having equity actors in your show?
We have lots of equity actors in our shows. By being young and new, we're kind of on the bottom tier of like the equity contracts, and like we'll get pushed up that ladder as we go. Understanding the politics around equity and negotiating with the union, like that's a whole other journey that we're excited to go on. But for right now, everything's been going pretty well, and we have, equity actors in the majority, and have since we've been in
really?
Our reception. The UC San Diego MFA actors are equity by their third year. So whether they're out of the UC San Diego program or whether here in the Bay Area, a lot of our actors are equity. So.
How do you manage to do that? A lot of companies shy away from equity because of the cost.
That will happen us.
Yeah.
Unless, there's some angel donor out there that really likes us and wants to help. But it, as we go up on that contract ladder, it will become prohibitively expensive.
Which actually loops us back to an earlier question you had around the ensemble. The way this company was founded was when Michael and William were at UC San Diego and they wanted to supplement their education and do interesting work, they created their own ensemble within their class and with the other classes and rehearsed from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. on all these pieces they were passionate about. But then also when we started producing the works up here in the Bay Area, the UC San Diego actors took up a lot of the roles, but not all of them. So we began recruiting Bay Area actors and developing our relationships here. We're all from here, but we kept on working and building and growing our network. And it got to the point as we grew the festival, as we grew our model, that our Bay Area ensemble began to form and grow. And one of the biggest prohibitive things that theater companies face as they try and grow and sustain is talented actors that they can work with. If you're not like a top ticket theater company that can afford, bringing outside people in and can afford, Margo Hall, hey, I want you to be in my show. Talent and training is really, really important. And so we have come across so many amazing Bay Area artists who haven't necessarily had the chance to go out and get a BFA, go out and get an MFA, but have so much raw potential, so much raw talent that our other way of kind of working both, again, like having our equity actors, but then also having a Bay Area ensemble in which we provide training for them, build their skills, build their expertise, and build our own team and know that we can trust them and work with them.
And two of the actors in Gospel are actually in the ensemble, Ro and Peeps. And to that point, also getting an MFA, getting a BFA are privileges. And so having the opportunity to share all of that knowledge with a group of people that don't have readily that opportunity actually feeds us, too. It's like, oh, this knowledge was worth something.
Age-wise, I mean, you're young folks who know young folks. How do you bring in older people to play older roles?
Our reputation has been good. So I think people are catching on to what it is we're doing. They want to take part. This sounds potentially arrogant, but really, like, we value the quality of the work. That takes care of a lot of things. So if the work is good, people see it and they go, oh my God, there's something there that's unique and different, and I want that. And as an artist, I want to be part of that. So like Don Troop and Halili Knox, for example, and Dorian Lockett, who were in Gospel of Loving Kindness, I mean, we're paying them, but we're not paying them rates that equal like ACT, and they're doing it for the passion of the piece.
Ubuntu Theater Project starts out with 7 shows its first season. Custom Made started with 3. Magic only does around 6 or 7 all year. This is a huge, huge project you've got going here because you're dealing with so many shows.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to say, our second summer, we did 6 shows. And we did those 6 shows in a month and a half or 2 months, mm-hmm. which was insane. And I don't recommend it, and I hope we never do that again. However, there was something about doing that many shows in that short amount of time that makes 7 shows throughout 7 months look a little bit more manageable. That being said, yeah, it's extraordinarily stressful, but it's also a huge opportunity. I mean, there are things that we will not be able to do potentially as we grow and get larger that we can do now. I think these things need to be done. And so we're throwing everything out there and doing it.
So it's possible down the road you'll have to contract the number simply because the rates will go up and you won't be in the same position you're in now.
That's true. However, for example, with Moss is being done at Laney before it comes to Ubuntu. So I also think that there are very creative solutions for theater companies with no money to do great work and a lot of it. And that's just one example. I think that's something we're always going to have our eye toward. And, like, 2 of these shows are also one-person shows, which is no small feat, but very different than, like, Grapes of Wrath with 20 people on stage. Finding creative solutions to be engaged in the community, and that allows you creative solutions if you're working with the community to put on really interesting theater.
Well, Michael Moran, you're also an actor. Have you considered, like, trying to do commercials and things like that to bring in the money for the project?
Time. yeah. But I love theater. I think theater is very different than film, TV, certainly commercials. I think there is a, for lack of a better word, a spiritual component to theater that I feel I need in my life. And I also think that as a society and culture, we need, and it is not quite being filled. And so I would love to act. I feel like our like last resort is if anything goes wrong, I'll just do a one-man show. which is a nice thing to have in your back pocket, I guess. But really, it's a passion for how theater might serve culture and society.
Colin Blattel, you got your BFA in theater, and you've always been interested in theater. At your end, when you're busy being one of the, what, quote-unquote, suits, mm-hmm. do you ever get the urge to say, you know, listen, Michael, listen, William, I want to be in this, I want to direct this?
I don't have to say it because they put me in one.
What were you in?
I was in Waiting for Lefty, and
he was great.
There was a dream of like, yeah, in the future I'd love for you to throw me in a show, you know, when things settle down or something. and instead of being asked, I was more like told, Colin, we need you in this role or this play's not happening unless you're in this one. Taking one for the team would be the wrong way of phrasing it, because it was a privilege. It was wonderful. It was stressful. You know, like somebody who's supposed to be kind of managing the front of house, you know, process, and then to be in the show, like, at the same time. Especially in the show, you had to be in costume, frozen while the audience entered and all that kind of stuff.
But I also think it goes to one of our sort of core values, which is that, like, being a man in the suit, quote unquote, also sort of gets down there and dirty with the acting and the labor of it. And there's something that engenders trust and family and camaraderie and fun and joy when that sort of square is circled.
Have you ever thought about doing a musical?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's this ongoing joke. Almost all of our shows have music in it. Like, we use singing and everything. One,
yeah.
Because I can't sing. So Grapes of Wrath is pretty close to a musical. William Hodgson, my co-artistic director, is an extraordinary singer, dancer, and actor. And so we're talking about possibly doing a musical next season.
The Ubuntu Theater Project is going to have 7 plays next season as well?
Well, that depends if our audiences come out, if they support, if they give us a little money. we'll see. The learning curves are so steep, but I think we looked at this and thought we could do this successfully right now, and so this was a very immediate sort of the moment choice and decision.
Exit Cuckoo, Nanny and Motherland begins February 11th and plays through
February 28th to the end of the month.
And that will be at
The Blueprint, 439 International Boulevard, Oakland, California.
And for more information about Ubuntu Theater Project, you can go to what website?
You can go to our website at www.ubuntutheaterproject.com, and theater spelt with E-R.
Yeah, let me ask you about that one. What is this business with the E-R and the R-E? I asked different people from different companies, and everybody kind of throws up their hands.
I've heard two answers. One is like one's British and one's American. Actually, what I think it is that one actually refers to the building and one refers to the form. So RE is actually referring to the form and ER actually refers to the building. But nobody knows that, and so we're just going with ER across the board.
Well, when I tell people, you know, go to marintheater.org, right, they might type ER and it's RE, and I think magic is RE.
Hmm.
I'm not even sure what's ER and what's RE, and I get confused.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's a toss-up.
But you, Ubuntu Theater is ER.
It's ER.
Correct. Michael Moran, you use the word Socrates. Is that your middle name?
It is, yeah. It is my middle name. I have two middle names, Socrates and Ulysses. I figure, since I have those names, that using Michael Socrates Moran might just kind of turn heads and catch eyes and get people to say, like, who the heck is this guy? Like, what is that about? So I'm using Michael Socrates Moran.
You've been listening to an interview with Michael Socrates Moran, who is the co-artistic director of Ubuntu Theater Project, and Colin Blattel, who is the managing director of Ubuntu Theater Project, which is located in Oakland. And once again, Exit Cuckoo, Nanny and Motherland starts
February 11th.
And for more information, you can go to ubuntutheaterproject.com. I'm Richard Walensky on Arts Waves.